As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, 3 points separate the bottom three. Davidson can do no wrong. That's Callum Davidson, not Joe Davidson. If you'd watch Line of Duty, she's really bad. And a demolition derby. I'm Andrew Slavin. Alongside me, we've got Motherwell senior producer Laura Brannan. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
And also, Tifo's JJ Bull. Hello, JJ.
Hello. I've not watched Line of Duty, but assuming it's like Warzone, did that Joe Davidson get to the final circle? Is that what you're talking about?
Kind of. I mean, Lady Duty, this cult drama thing that a lot of people watched at the weekend.
It was
the
season finale. Andrew hitting out with the spoilers one day after the finale.
I didn't hit any of the spoiler. We all know Joe Davidson is a bad egg. But like I said, Callum Davidson is a good egg.
And how did he finish in the Battle Royale?
He's still in it. A couple more rings to go. Rings?
Because it's the cup. Yeah, the cup. Yeah, that's a battle royale. I get it. I like it. This analogy works slightly. Let's move on.
JJ, you're at the TIFO now. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. That's correct. If there's another podcast you'd like to listen to, I'll be on it. It's not about Scottish football. It's about other football, but it's part of the Athletic family, which obviously we are also part of.
Good stuff,
my first
man.
Day properly is on Tuesday, and it's lovely stuff. Yeah, TIFO, it's great. The YouTube videos are amazing.
Yeah, the stuff is really, really good. I wonder if we were supposed to be doing a podcast about football, because football is apparently dead, isn't it, Laura?
Well, it really did.
Yeah, it wasn't you who murdered it. Who murdered it?
The SPFL murdered it.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, it was this news during the week of the Tunnocks Caramel Wafer Cup. As if it wasn't a joke enough as it was with a title like that. They went and, went and awarded Inverness and Raith Rovers joint winners of the 1920 Tunnocks Caramel Wafer Cup. I'm sorry, that's just ridiculous.
1920? What year are we in?
It may as well be in 1919, 1920. It's just, it's a joke. How can you reward two teams equally with a trophy?
Well, I mean, the reason is because the squads have changed so dramatically, isn't it? And you even had Scott Gardner, the Inverness chief executive, in favour of not playing this game, because he was saying the same thing. Five players they had left from the semi-final winning squad.
Like, I get it, but then, like, we've been joking about, like, Celtic had lost players when they went into the cup final, and Craig Gordon was on the other side of the opposition, and, like, teams change, right? And I get that, but if you've waited this long to play it, just play it. Whether it's in 5 years' time or 25 years' time, just play it. Or don't play it. Just scrap the whole competition. I mean, really, they should just have played it last season, like the start of this season when football came back with no fans.
Scrapping it would have been way worse, though, when you think a club and players do everything that they can to do, like, get clubs progressing in competitions and whatnot. And I believe the players that were involved in the competition will all be receiving winners' medals.
Yeah, but are they going to have half a trophy in their trophy cabinet?
No, of course they won't, Laura. Funnily enough, I mean,
they should.
As we record this podcast, we do it on a Monday,
like in England, the FA Vase and Trophy finals of 2019 and 2020, not 1920, Laura, are being played right now. It can be played, like you say, Laura, and it's just a bit weird that it's not being played. But there you go. This is for me here. I have to, before we get into the weekend's action, a special shout out to Stephen Dobie, who has left Queen of the South. This is his final season at the club. He spent 7 years at Palmerston over two spells. The guy's an absolute legend. He is the King of Queens. And he played his last game on Friday against Dundee, which they lost, sadly. But even though fans weren't in the ground to give him a send-off, there was like some good scenes that I saw of fans.
He sounds so sad, like he's dead. Like it's...
Well, no, it's just the end of an era, isn't it? It's just one of these, you know, he's such a legend at the club. He's got a statue outside and everything. He's always going to be welcomed back. It's just one of those things. You know, when something ends, it's just a bit sad. I mean, it depends who you support, really. But
yeah. I like how the video of him doesn't... It's not like he's important enough to blur out his car's license plate number.
Oh, yeah!
Like that. Just fully on. I'm going to find him, yeah.
Let's talk about Scotland because, hey, we're in a major competition pretty soon. Billy Gilmore made his first start under Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea.
He was very good, by the way. He was really good.
UEFA have kind of upped these squad sizes. So it's 26 instead of 23. I think Billy Gilmore should definitely go amongst a few others. I also think Turnbull should go. What's your guys' thoughts? Laura, you must. You'll definitely think that Turnbull should go.
Yeah, I think it would be very odd if you weren't to call up who is probably the only kind of candidate for Celtic's Player of the Year this season. Mm. I think it'd be really strange not to include Turnbull after the year he's had. I'll be honest, I've not actually watched much of Billy Gilmore. I don't see a lot of English football in general, so I haven't seen him play. And obviously, with him not being in the Scotland squads, I've not really got much to judge him on. I've heard very good things about him, though. And if he's going to be as exciting as everyone makes out, wonderful. I think he's of a kind of similar ilk to what we're talking about with Nathan Patterson. He has definitely got a future with Scotland. And by all means, let's not hang around if there's space for him. He may not play the games, but if he is good enough, then he is old enough. In that case, let him go along, let him experience it, and you never know. There could be some sort of emergency where he has to get flung in, and that's how heroes are made.
JJ, with the exposure to this sort of competition, it's not going to faze him that much because I would expect him to be training every day with world-class players at Chelsea. It would kind of be normal for him, wouldn't it?
I mean, I don't know what the pressure is like playing an international tournament compared to training with like people you know day in, day out. But what I would say about Gilmore particularly is that he's a very specific kind of player that we don't really have. Ryan Jack's the closest in style, I would say, to him, but Gilmore will be better than Ryan Jack. Like, I don't have any doubt about it. Mm. He's so young, makes the right decision every single time. His positional awareness, tactical awareness, like quality of pass and touch, he is right up there. He can play for Chelsea instead of someone like Jorginho, you know, like international footballer who's played at the absolute highest level. Gilmore can do that. So maybe you want to bring him in, same as like Patterson, Laura's seen about that. And Turnbull, who we worked out was on the weekend, has a higher chance creation per game this season than Lionel Messi. It's slightly different leagues, but it's relevant. However, there was a thing about this, the squad extension to 26 rather than 23 players. So one of the difficult parts of being a manager is, you know, squad management. And so you want to keep the squad smaller because it means that you're closer knitted almost. When you start expanding it, then you start to have people who are just not going to get involved in the team, and they might start not misbehaving, but then they're just not there and it might detract from team morale, something like that. So then you think who you want to bring along is someone who's happy to be on the bench, so maybe a youngster, but also maybe someone who's got experience, who's just good for the dressing room, that kind of thing. Like the example, like for England example, like Trent Alexander-Arnold, one of the best right backs you'd think in Europe maybe, but he's not going to play first, so if he's there, is it a distraction? So then you bring someone like Turnbull along, is it a distraction? Is he going to be going like, why am I not starting? Because I've had a better season than Christie, but Christie's starting, so why am I not here? Is it better to not have them in just now and keep the close-knitted? Because a lot of the thing that Steve Clarke has done is put a group of players together who feel like a bit of a nice close team.
It's a group.
But if you expand it might have a little change in it. It might make no difference whatsoever, but I'm sure there are nuances and slight psychological benefits and deficits to having this expanded bit. So interesting to see what the manager does. I think he's a very good manager. So
Yeah, absolutely. Well, later on in the podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about Partick Thistle, who had a good weekend. They're back in the Championship, at least. But first, let's talk about the final game between Celtic and Rangers of the season.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Maybe he fancies that Holton goal after all. It is Defoe! And isn't that just typical of Jermaine Defoe? A goal in this derby! And the final humiliation for Celtic!
Rangers' unbeaten league season is still on as they put Celtic firmly in their place with a 4-1 win at Ibrox on Sunday. It's one of those games that gets billed as like a, you know, top end game in Scotland. It's going to be an absolute barnstormer, and it kind of was for the first half at least. But Callum McGregor getting shown a second yellow card, and then Kemar Roofe with an absolute gorgeous finish, to be fair, just started everything off, and second half kind of declined for me. What did you think, JJ?
I thought Rangers were much better throughout. I mean, the sending off killed the game, obviously, but I just thought Rangers were much better. For the first, I don't know how long of the first half, but I thought it was a bit of a stramash and no team had any control whatsoever. Actually, that might have been the whole of the first half. It was really fast, kind of. It was entertaining. It couldn't really work out what either team was trying to do, especially. It seemed like Rangers were playing this, like maybe a diamond midfield, I think. I think it changed so much. There was so much rotation of positions and it's so fluid. We had Kamara and Arebo in midfield kind of holding it. Davis was superb throughout. Mm. There's like a six in between them. Fullbacks were getting high. Tavernier was good in the right as well. And then the strikers were defending as a flat three. And then Celtic just didn't have anything to them. I don't know whether they were really much flatter than I thought they'd be.
I think Celtic started the first half encouraging. But it just... Yeah, I do. I think there was, like you said...
I thought it was too wild, though. Like, too fast on fast forward, yeah.
Gerrard came out after the game and said that his game plan certainly worked. He said that Celtic have weaknesses and that he wanted to play... like you said, he deployed Roofe and Morelos, two front players, to just sit on top of Celtic's defensive line to create chaos, basically. And it certainly happened. I mean, Roofe's finish for the first goal was absolutely sublime, Laura, amongst... Well, the other three, which were all good goals, to be fair.
I'm going to be a bit controversial and say I wasn't that blown away by his goal. I think he meant it. I think it takes a lot of skill to do what he did, but I don't think it's very aesthetically pleasing on the eye.
JJ's face there.
I'm not having it. This is the guy who scored from inside his own half earlier in the season, and they were raving about him turning it in with his chest. I'm sorry, I'm not as blown away as everyone else in this one.
Interesting. That's just so clever.
It's very clever. Yeah, no, it's very clever and very talented. It's just, it's not,
you're
it's
very
not very pretty to watch. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's hard to do, what he's done. It's really clever.
I completely get that. No, I completely get that. There's so much skill involved. And it is.
I just wonder, because I think it looks so cool. It's so odd to me that you find it not...
But it's just visually watching it. And visually watching it, when people talk about outstanding goals, I expect to like see the burst, the net bursting, and maybe long range or a bit of, I don't know, a bit of like one-twos and nutmegs and stuff. I get that there's so much skill that goes into it, and very few people could probably pull it off themselves, but... It's just not
promo
me watching
material.
It. Yeah, that's
it's not promo. It's not something you're going to see Sky Sports turn around on a VT to be like, remember
like
this,
it.
And it takes like 6 seconds to to watch the ball go over the net. Okay, fair enough. I think you can still enjoy the goal. We should mention this is the first time in 21 years that Celtic have gone a whole season without beating Rangers. I mean, 5 meetings in all competitions, and they also beat them last season as well, if we remember that. So, I mean, Rangers' dominance over Celtic has been coming for a long time. It's just this Celtic side, when you look at them, JJ, the rebuild that they have in the summer is quite astonishing when you look at potentially the amount of players that want to leave and the amount they have to bring in.
Yeah, it looks like it has to be a full rebuild or something like that. They need a new manager. They're going to lose some players. They're going to bring a few in. Scott Brown's leaving. I've said that for a while. I think that'll be a big change to them, the way the internal parts of the dressing room work. They looked just a bit of a mess. Like thinking, we all thought, I think we all said at the start of the season, they were going to just stroll, but they'd win the 10, right? It was going to happen. And what a difference one season has made. They are all over the place.
It's pretty crazy because if you think a lot of players potentially may have left last summer, but because of the pandemic, because of potentially chasing 10 in a row, some of these players haven't been playing at their best all season. And the suggestion was when we spoke to Kieran Devlin from The Athletic halfway through the season that players like Ncham, Christopher Ayer, even Odson Edouard are some of these players that were looking likely to want to leave. And Laura, those players are massive players. So when we mention the rebuild, how do you bring in other big game players? Because Celtic's transfer policy have been about bringing in young players and developing them.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a lot of big names there that may not have been entirely mentally tuned in. If it's true, if we are to believe that players like Edouard wanted to leave the club, last summer. So there's questions over that. And then you're looking at the spine of the team, obviously. You want to try and get your main crux of the team. You want to be solid and experienced players, but then as you're saying, it's not really what Celtic have really kind of bought into in the past. They do go for kind of younger unknown names, the likes of your Van Dijks and your Wanyamas, to then sell them on as big transfers. That's always kind of been the policy at Celtic, so that might be part of the whole kind of rebranding of the, not rebranding's maybe the wrong word of it, but the whole kind of reshuffling of the club in the summer and the new look Celtic we're going to see, which is, it's not just the players on the pitch and the manager in the dugout, but it's straight up technical directors and chief executives. It might just also be the way they do recruitment as well. That might all change the scouting system and everything. It's a big task in their hands. I think this defeat kind of nails in that I don't think we're going to see John Kennedy getting the job. I think that's sort of now, if there was any question marks, I think that's it. The chances are gone now for him. It's just too hard to lose, even if it's a meaningless game at the end of the season. It's never a meaningless game in these derbies. Mm-hmm. And to lose by 4 goals to Rangers, I don't think he could recover from that as a manager.
There is a suggestion and a rumour, I should say, that John Kennedy could be installed as a technical director or director of football at Celtic, which would continue that kind of succession of bringing ex-players into the club. And I just wonder if it should be a complete overhaul.
I do like the idea of Kennedy still staying at the club in some shape or form. He's been involved in the club right from pretty much the days he was breaking through. And being this young footballer at the time, and we all know his story of he's having his career cut short, and the club still stood by him during all that time. And during the days he was scouting for the club, and he was helping out behind the scenes to then moving into coaching and that side of stuff with the young side, and moving up to the first team. Celtic do have a lot of kind of loyalty to Celtic people, former players like that, people that have connections with the club. I think it would be wrong to just be like, well, he's had this bad spell on the sidelines to Neil Lennon. He's had a kind of troubled period in charge of the team at the end of a season when there was nothing to play for. Okay, albeit the Scottish Cup. I think it'd be harsh to punish him so much to then be like, right, we're going to cut ties with you now. Your time with the club is over with. So I do like the idea of kind of giving him something in terms of a role at Celtic. I definitely could not see being the manager or even assistant manager for that sense, in that case.
Well, Eddie Howe still seems like the heavy favourite to take the job. We don't know yet. But JJ, we mentioned last week the fact that Gerrard had won one domestic trophy out of a possible 9. It's maybe not a good
thing.
That's
not good, is it?
A league title this season, 4 wins over Celtic. I think it was 3 in the league. I mean, that for Rangers fans is an enjoyable season.
Yes. I wonder, as not a Rangers fan myself, whether they might think it's a little bit of an underachievement having not also won a cup. Do you not think?
I think like so, league, 100%.
To be clear, the league winning, like the what he's done to win the league is amazing. He's melted Celtic. Like they've gone.
Yeah.
They've gone. So that's a huge achievement, but this is the argument to be had that cups are so random and knockout that weird things can happen. But Celtic managed to do it about 20 times in a row, so you think maybe you should do better. It's odd. I think it will be a good season for Rangers. They got far in the Europa League, which I think, as far as they got, is an achievement itself. Domestic Cups, you should maybe have done better, but maybe that system's slacking off a couple of times and it'll get improved. I mean, part of the thing we talk about, Gerard, what you've done so well is putting a winning culture at the club, and it'll take a bit longer. And the Celtic team that won so many were pretty much uncontested and constantly on, you know, in momentum the entire time when they won those trophies. Mm-hmm. So it could be that's the difference was. Now it's a bit more contested. But yeah. Well done.
Well done, Rangers.
Well done to them.
Well, they've got two more games to try and secure an unbeaten league campaign. They play Livingston away and then Aberdeen at home to finish the campaign. There you go. Coming up, the boys at the bottom get back to winning ways.
Harry, is there any truth in the rumours that you're off to Spain in the summer?
Sorry, me no hablo inglés.
What about one of the Manchester clubs?
Well,
Harry, what about my source who says you're keen to stay at Spurs?
Can we keep the questions sensible, please?
Kane's future at Spurs remains uncertain, but you're guaranteed to get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold ACCA lets you down. Paddy Power!
Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive, exclude shop bets and enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Anderson. And it's trickling in, it's gone in. Moyo. Oh, the academical heart is still beating strong. They've looked down and out yet again, but they're reminding everyone yet again. Do not write Aki's off. 2-0 in Paisley.
To quote Brian, Rice, Rice, baby. Yep, I did it. It's never over with Hamilton. Their game at St Mirren on Saturday was the one they had to win. And they did just that. A 2-1 victory in Paisley. They just seemed to come out of nowhere and surprise everyone. It's only Hamilton's third win, to be fair, of this year, 2021. Not 1920, Laura. We're out of that. So they're now 2 points off 11. And 3 points off 10th with two games to go. Their final two games are against the two clubs above them. I mean, this is class. This is why we love the split, Laura.
Yeah, and I love it even more because Motherwell aren't involved. And I can sit back and I can enjoy it as a neutral and not have been in any way connected to anything that's happening. Apart from the fact that Motherwell were playing Ross County in the last game of the season, so could actually have a bearing in what happens. But I don't have to go through the same stress as fans or workers at any of the three teams at the bottom of the league. So, yeah, as a neutral, this is fun. This is it's exciting, and it's exactly what we want from the split. We want these teams to be playing each other come the last couple of games of the season. We want it to be looking at the table, looking at goal difference, looking at everything, and all the teams playing at the same time to really get the most out of it.
Interestingly, from a telly standpoint, if Motherwell were, say, to relegate Ross County on the final day of the season and you're there filming, do you just focus on the Motherwell players, or do you kind of mop up some of the, like, you know, anguish and disappointment from the opposition at all, or do you just focus on Motherwell?
It's an interesting question, actually. We haven't even got that far to think about it, but I would say your natural reaction would just be purely to focus on Motherwell because we are Motherwell, we're the club, we're club TV, so to speak. We are Motherwell propaganda, so to speak, to that extent. But at the same time, you have to tell a story of what is happening. So yeah, there's a bigger story there that these players might have, say, 1-2-0, and you're celebrating these players scoring those goals, but it's what they've done to the opposition which is the story of the game. It might not be Motherwell's story, but it is the story of what's happened in the match. So I mean, for example, when Motherwell concede goals, I don't personally, we've got two people that film the games, the other bullet films, he will film the opposition celebrating the goal, whereas I then zoom in on our players and I film like their frustrated reactions and their anger at each other, and so that means we've got both sides of it. So it kind of be the same element to that. We might not be in their faces at full time on the pitch, shoving a camera in their faces as they're crying, sitting on the pitch looking sad, but you would definitely have some element of it during the match, during the 90 minutes, of some sort of frustration or heartbreak or that kind of sense.
Well, apologies to Hamilton fans, because I did start this segment to focus on Hamilton. So I will bring it back and talk about, well, JJ's favourite fantasy football player, Ross Callaghan, who opened the scoring, his 9th league goal of the season, and just Mr. Hamilton. He just seems to be not the only player, but he is the key man for most of this campaign.
Yeah, he's been great. I think he hit the bar from about 35 yards or something like that with another hit that the keeper pushed on. I think the keeper might have pushed it onto the bar even. Just a really good, determined player. I think he's about 27, is he? So like coming to his peak years, so he's just driving, because I think you could play, I was going to say play at a higher level than Hamilton, but I mean that's like three clubs above him, basically, is what I think I mean. I like him. I think he's a good player. I also, in this game, in Hamilton's win, which I think we called last week, Didn't I mentioned it when we got the odds? Charlie maybe did with his odds when he brought it up, because they're going to finish 10th, right? But with Hamilton and Ross County, two teams who have struggled all season, and they're playing against teams who maybe don't have an awful lot to play for now, and you see the difference in motivation and how that then maybe is what's being able to let them win that game, particularly here. Hamilton were just really sharp all the way through it. And Goodwin made a lot of changes for this game, and he said after the game that they basically won't get in another one. After what happened. Yeah, I think you see that in the way they played throughout.
Well, this win just gets them that little bit of confidence going into the next game against Ross County, I think a week on Wednesday. I mean, that game's utterly massive and would potentially, I think, decide what's going to happen in the final day of the season, because we know we've got Kilmarnock that have dropped into the relegation playoff place. But speaking of Ross County, they won as well. It's typical, isn't it? Like when you're bottom of the table and you get a win, and then you're looking at the other results and you're like, oh, bloody hell, Ross County have also won. They were 2-0 winners against Dundee United. So actually, it's even better that we are joined now by Kenny McLennan, supporter liaison officer of Ross County, to tell us what he thinks. I suppose most games, all games in fact, are must win, but this one in particular must give you like the confidence that you've been sorely needing going into the final two games. How are you feeling going into it?
Well, certainly after Saturday's result, I mean, that's probably the best I've seen us play in a long time. You know, probably since the first two games of the season. I think it made a big, massive difference having Blair Spittle in again and playing Stephen Kelly a little bit further forward. So we had Gardiner on one side, Spittle on the other. That seemed to make a huge difference. I mean, I'm a big Blair Spittle fan, if I'm honest. He's always, every time he's played for us, he's always looked like a goal threat as well, so... but the move in the line, I don't know if you saw the first goal, but the whole and the move up to that first goal was just excellent, really. And you know, if we can get a bit more of that for the next two games, keep the side, unless something happens, unless anybody gets injured or suspended, keep the same side, because they moved the ball about well, the urgency was there, something that's really been lacking. You know, I mean, the St Mirren game was just so frustrating to watch. I just didn't think we turned up for that game, if I'm honest. But and with it being a home game as well, that was even more annoying, you know. But definitely Saturday's game, given that was the same Dundee United side that beat Aberdeen convincingly, you know, we give them a good go.
You're talking about like personnel changes there, but overall, what's changed since John Hughes has come in? And did you expect this to have like the impact he's had? Did you expect this?
I would say it maybe started off like that when he came in, but it's kind of sort of petered out. Well, to be honest, it's really strange because we've matched up well against the sides. And well, this is my take on it. we've matched up well against the sides that play open football. We haven't matched up against the teams around us where it's a bit more scrap, a bit more of a battle, a bit more of you know, the ball's all over the place. There's not, you know, the football's not as open as you're playing against Dundee United. They like to try and move the ball a bit quick. And I mean, I'm a bit disappointed as well, like, you know, because I'm a big Stuart Kettle fan. You know, the guy's put so much into the club and stuff like that. And it was, that's a difficult one for us, like, you know, because I think any fan, nobody wanted to see the guy lose his job, like, you know, but, you know, he's the first to own up. If things weren't going well, you know, he would have been the first to say, well, you know, maybe somebody else needs to come in and have a go, you know, and he's an honest guy. But John, I would say, you know, listening to me, he does a lot more roaring from the sidelines and stuff like that, you know. If things aren't going well, you're going to know about it. So I would say maybe in training and stuff like that, he's maybe doing a lot more, you know, he's not giving the guys a minute. He's writing about them. He's basically putting the point across that, you know, this is in their own hands. They've got to get out there and they've got to realise that it's not just their own jobs they're playing for. You know, there's other people at the club's jobs involved here. You know, if you drop down, what impact's that going to have on jobs throughout the club? You know, so you know, it's a big thing. You know, but it's a difficult one. Like, you know, because I like the Championship. You know, more wins, more goals. You know, it's a more competitive league in my mind. So the football's more expressive, whereas in the bottom rung of the Premiership, we're getting whipped every week by bigger teams, and relegation that would obviously put everybody in a bit of a downer. I think, you know, it's not what anybody wants. You know, it's that feeling of dropping down. You know, it's not good for the players, you know, but
no.
Or the management. I don't know what would happen with. I suppose Yogi wouldn't get the role if they go down. You know, because he's been told that his agenda is to keep us up. Mm-hmm. But I would say, going by Saturday's result, you know, the only, he said this himself, our only problem has been most of the season is we've not managed to back it up by doing consecutive performances like that. But maybe this is the turning point now, you know, where there's only two more games left. The guys know what they need to do. They're two cup finals. Just get stuck in.
Well, JJ, look, unlike Jim Goodwin and Callum Davidson's weekend, Mickey Mellon didn't make a lot of changes, and it didn't work for him. He stuck with the team that absolutely smashed Aberdeen and gets a completely different result.
Yeah, he smashed an Aberdeen team with clear, like, tactical holes, and also, like I said earlier, they had motivation because it was a cup game. Whereas they don't have much in the Premiership because it's already kind of done, and Ross County are trying to survive. They're fighting for survival. And so that's going to give them a bit of extra oomph in everything you see. And I don't think it was anything particularly tactical. There's no wizardry that Hughes pulled off or anything like that. There was, you know, they played a 4-5-1 here, but they played a 4-2-3-1 and 4-4-2 and a few different systems recently. It's not like this one suits them more than others. It's just that the players were more on it. They weren't amazing or anything like that. It's just that they scored a goal. They got another from a corner. And then kind of locked it down. And it was just that little brief 5-minute spell, which happens quite often, that they got in it. Dundee United weren't very good either, but they'll be better next week.
Yeah, they weren't very good. And I think they will be focusing on the cup. The big losers of the weekend were Kilmarnock, because Ross County, winning their game, they move up to 10th. And Kilmarnock swept aside 2-0 by Motherwell at Fir Park. Laura, a good one for you to enjoy again. But Kilmarnock, like I said, down into the relegation playoff place. And Tommy said they got what they deserved. Did they deserve it, Laura?
They did, to be honest. I was expecting a wee bit more from Kilmarnock. Going by games between the two sides this season, Kelly have been completely on the ball every time. May not have won every game, but I was expecting at this stage of the season, with them still fighting for it, and Kyle Lafferty back in the side, I just thought they would have more fight about themselves, more heart as well, going out there and actually looking like they were trying to fight for survival. It didn't quite look like that. With Motherwell, look, obviously Motherwell are wanting to go for as many points as possible, but you could never really forgive a team if they did sort of get a wee bit complacent at this stage of the season. So with that in mind, yeah, I was expecting a much closer game, to be honest. I know Kelly had a something like 18 shots, I think, but there was only four of them were actually on target. And it didn't ever really feel like they were challenging Liam Kelly. He had a few good saves to make. Liam Kelly, being Liam Kelly, pulls them off wonderfully. But no, I think, I mean, Sam Foley came into the team. He had his kind of first 90 minutes for the side, and he was a sort of old head in midfield that Motherwell really kind of benefited from, that we haven't really seen so far this season. Devante Cole as well has been absolutely a breath of fresh air since Alexander came in at the start of 2021. I think he has really come on to a game, and you can really, so I think you, more so than any other game, I think he really kind of played out of his skin this one. He scored the first one obviously, and then assisted the second one. And just his little movements, he's pacing the ball, his lovely little touches, his control, he had it all for this. And his awareness as well, to not just be selfish and take the second effort and actually pass it over to Stephen O'Donnell for his goal. He's been playing really well. So there's definitely positives from a Motherwell perspective. Kelly, I've been saying right from the start when Tommy Wright came in, oh no, it'll be fine, he'll come on to something, and with Lafferty signing and everything, and I was so confident that they were going to pull it off. Now though, I'm not quite as confident. I thought I would see more from them, and they really need to step up in the last two games if they're going to survive this.
Well, this is a seventh away defeat in 2021, and they've got Hamilton on the final day of the season. At Hamilton, I mean, it's not these things aren't easy when you're in a relegation scrap, but you have to rely on your players to come up with the goods in the end. And Tommy Wright might be doing everything he can, but if the players don't turn up, then what else are you going to get? And it's strange because we mentioned that Dundee United, well, they're playing for the cup and whatnot, but a good side this season, Motherwell, who don't have anything to play for this season, can still beat Kilmarnock, who are fighting for their lives. JJ, what's your thoughts?
I mean, it feels like Kilmarnock look a bit different now than how they did at the start of the season. Like, it's almost like a different team. The same sort of key individuals there, but a lot of the players seem to have changed. I agree with Laura that you'd maybe expect them to put in a bit more, and you can see Wright was not at all pleased at the final whistle. I know we're talking about Kilmarnock, but Devante Cole genuinely has turned into a decent player. And I wonder if Laura can let me know more about how that has happened. Because he was a talented player before. Like, I've watched him in Y-Scout and that, but then he just seems to be better now. But what is making him better?
I mean, I don't know the secret to it, to be honest, but there's probably some element of the confidence that the Graham Alexander's come in, installed this positivity and confidence throughout the squad. He's obviously one that is benefiting from this mentality, a shift in mentality. He's been given this freedom to play through the middle, which is probably a big part.
That's it, yeah, sure.
I mean, Stephen Robinson, and Graham Alexander to an extent as well, has this season shuffled the front three around from game to game, even within games, depending on how it's going. And Devante Cole has found himself wide of the three quite often, but more so recently he has been playing through the middle. That is down to a mix of his performances, the other performances, and also injuries as well. Like, for example, Tony Watt has missed the last couple of games through injury. So that, coupled with the mentality, I think, has really helped him just come onto something. And it's the, what we always say about confidence breeds confidence. If he's scoring week in, week out, it's just going to lead to more because he's not got that drought behind him.
You can definitely tell that when Alexander came in, that he said to Cole, you're going to play as well. Like, there's not going to be any chopping and changing for him because he's the number one striker. It seems like you just look at 11 goals this season and 10 of those coming since Alexander arrived. That confidence, like you say, Laura, it's so evident to see.
Yeah, definitely. You can also see when he's enjoying his football as well, which is such a big part of it. Devante is a very shy and reserved character, and you don't see a lot of personality from him day to day around the place. In general terms, I mean, not obviously in his own wee group of friends, but on Saturday, actually, from my perspective filming, I was in the tunnel before the game, and he was in the tunnel and he gave me like this big smile and thumbs up, which at the time I thought, wow, that's so nice, because you don't normally get that flash of personality, especially at that stage of the day as well, before the game. And then at full time as well, we're always on the pitch getting the boys' reactions, and he is quite consistently one that doesn't engage with the camera. It's head down. Even when he scored and had a good game, he doesn't engage. He's so shy in that sense, but he engaged, and again he reacted to the camera and said something. And it's little things like that you just notice, that just shows just how much he's enjoying his football just now.
Do you think it's tough, JJ, when you've got like a really famous dad, like Andy Cole's his dad?
I don't know why you're asking me that.
Is your dad not famous?
No. No, to be fair to him, and I'm going to steal this one from JJ, he doesn't like talking about his dad. And I find that when he does press conferences and some journalists might come along and who don't know him very well or don't really know the kind of backstory and stuff, they go to the default question of, oh, yeah, we know who your dad is, so let's ask you about that. Or let's ask you about our Man United. And he's like, well, I'm not a Man United fan. And he's like, I'm an Arsenal fan because of his mum. His mum's from London. And it's little things like that. He doesn't like to draw attention to his dad or talk about it or dwell on it because he wants to have his own career. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want connected in that way whatsoever because there's extra pressure put on your shoulders or there's more expectations or people think differently of you if they connect you to such a successful player before him. So no, he doesn't like talking about it in the slightest, and I think that's kind of, it's nice for him to just be his own player, be his own self and not be connected in that way.
It oddly reminded me of Arnold Schwarzenegger in Kindergarten Cop with that famous line, who is your daddy and what does he do? But yeah, he seems pretty settled at Fir Park. But who knows, Laura, because you've mentioned to me before that he's out of contracts this summer. We will wait to see what happens there. But after the break, Aberdeen is who we're going to speak about, who joined the real European Super League.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Aberdeen booked a place in the sexy league, or the conference league, as it will be known in real life. A 2-1 win for them at Livingston on Saturday, and a first league win under Stephen Glass. It's his fourth game in charge, and JJ, did this rank in probably the best performance under his stewardship?
I think, well, because they got the win, so that's important, but I think, yeah, it was good. There were some really good parts to it. I think Callum Hendry played really well. I think Dylan McGeoch was really important in the midfield. Made a big difference being there because he can keep the ball and he knows the angles he needs to make to offer the passing triangles, all that sort of stuff. I thought the two centre-backs stayed way deeper than they have in recent games, which I think might be Glass maybe, what's the word, adapting what he wants to do so that it suits what Hoban and Constein can do. not run fast. Give themselves a bit of space, not have to pass too much. It's still not quite there. I thought Gary Woods had a very good game as well. Interesting. And notably, Conor McLennan, who started his career as a striker in the youth ranks and then was a right winger. He played at right back. I thought he was excellent. And it was his header on the penalty spot during an open play move that gave Hendry his chance to score from 2 yards for the opener, which is very attacking when your right fullback is the guy who's in the box as a striker getting on the end of a cross. Well done to them. Oh, and Hedges was back too, came off the bench. Yeah, he's a good player, Hedges.
Yeah, he's a good player too. What is it, he was out for, what, about 4 weeks or something like that? 4, 5, 6 weeks?
Oh, it was longer than that, I think. He tore a muscle, I think, in his chest, yeah. I think it was.
But
yeah.
Callum Hendry, you mentioned earlier, JJ. You look at since he came in at Pittodrie, that was his third goal of his loan spell. So he's currently Aberdeen's top goal scorer since he joined. And that's how bad Aberdeen have been at scoring goals.
Well, I mean, they scored 2 goals in open play in this game, which is nuts. That hasn't happened for so long. I think Ferguson must be the top scorer with penalties. Well, then you remember Sam Cosgrove is scoring so many, and almost all of his goals were penalties before, because that's what they would do. They grind out a 1-0 win with a penalty. It's a lot more fun to watch all of a sudden, regardless of winning or losing. It's just a lot more fun, a lot more attacking. The whole game is a lot more open.
Are we going to see a completely different Aberdeen team after the summer?
Yeah, they'll do a huge rebuild. I think they're trying to get it done early. There was some noise about Glass wanting to get everything in place and getting it done. I'm not sure who will stay there. I mean, you think like McCrory and Ferguson, the ones you build it around because they're the most talented that are there. But it's odd. It should be quite good. I was surprised by Lively weren't very good, and Martindale was just screaming at them throughout. Screaming. He'll like tear a vocal cord at some point doing it. They weren't great at all. I don't really know what to say about them more than they just, I don't know. I noticed that the striker Poplatnik looks like the singer from Future Islands. That was the thing I took away most from Livingston.
I looked at that. I disagree. I mean, also, really? that singer is like in his late 40s or something like that, isn't he?
Oh, one thing, like, that is one harsh. Thing is Emmanuel Thomas's finish was absolutely amazing. It's like Alan Shearer versus West Ham in, I think, the early 2000s. Like, it's such a good finish. Like, technically, like, to be able to hit a ball like that and get it down without smashing it over the bar, it's one of the best goals I've seen.
I think he's probably one of the. It's hard because he doesn't do it often, but when he does things like that, you're like, why aren't you playing at a much higher level? Because he was out of the game for such a long time. I've said it before, he was a massive Arsenal prospect and he's revered highly at Bristol City. But then I think injuries and then a small time out in Thailand, I think it was, he was playing. He didn't play football for almost 2 years. And he turns up at Livingston. I mean, these are the types of people that David Martindale seems to unearth quite amazingly. And yeah, that finish was absolute class. Always remember.
Oh, but Laura, was that a good goal for you?
Yeah, I'll accept that one. Okay. Pass the test.
That is promo worthy.
One day I'll work out what Laura's parameters are for a good goal. One day I'll figure it out.
Oh, God. Well, let's finish up in what could be a Scottish Cup final rehearsal. St Johnstone ran out 1-0 winners over Hibs at Easter Road. And I said it last week, Callum Davidson, I would say, is definitely up there as a tout for the manager of the year, but he made 7 changes from the game against Rangers and basically put out a second string and still beat Hibs. I mean, that's confidence.
Yeah, this is impressive from him. Isn't it something, they've only conceded something like 4 goals in the last 11 games, I think it is, and 2 of them were against Rangers. So this is impressive stuff. Like, I don't want it to turn into the We Love Callum Davidson show, because we are absolutely singing his praises every single week.
Probably, he's rightly a very good manager.
Yeah, he's a new one. But yeah, to be able to change your side to essentially a second string team to who beat Rangers last week and still manage to get the points, it's very impressive from him. It's very good. Disappointing for Hibs though. I don't think they played well in this game. They were missing Nisbet, weren't they? I think he picked up a slight knock. But Jack Ross, I think he'll be annoyed with that. He got booked for speaking to the refs as well on the pitch. I don't know if this was at half time or at full time, but it was at full time. He was contesting obviously one of the decisions, and he got booked for it. Now, I don't know. Like, this is something that I've always kind of disagreed with, but I just don't like booking, like, non-footballers outside of 90 minutes. It's just getting a bit ridiculous. And he said in his post-match, he's like, 1 week I'm allowed to speak to him, another week I'm not. Obviously, it's depending on who the ref is.
Depending on what they're saying.
Yeah, and what he's contesting. I mean, okay, fine, just be consistent, but also, I just don't like this booking rule. I'm not a fan of it. It's a bit harsh.
JJ, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's quite funny being able to. I think it's funny being able to book a coach. Yeah,
I don't think that's how rules are made. Oh, this will be funny. No. Let's introduce this.
But it's funny booking someone who's not even on the pitch. That is funny.
Oh, it is. I mean, our sports scientist got booked in a game earlier this season.
Oh, that's really good. You book a sports scientist. What's the lowest rank that can get booked?
Probably.
Could you get booked?
No, it's whoever gets.
Not to
put
say
on.
You're low. Sorry.
I would absolutely love it if I could get booked. No, it's whoever gets named on the team sheet. So in terms of non-players on the team sheet, it's whoever's in the dugout, or around the dugout area, who's allowed in the dugout. So you've got out with your coaches and your goalkeeper coach. You've only really got your doctor and your sports scientist are really the only, and physio are really the only other kind of candidates.
Are they listed on the team sheet? They're not, are they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are listed on the team sheet. So that's how they're allowed to get booked.
I was gonna say, please, can you try and get booked next week?
I'd absolutely love it if I could. I would absolutely frame that.
Going 2 foot a player on the pitch. In terms of the actual game, I think Ryan Portis has had a couple of poor weeks. Like, he seems to do really well for a bit and then he lets it go, and it's a shame because he could be a good player.
Well, he had a great week in the penalty shootout to get them into the semi-finals, the Scottish Cup, to be fair.
Yeah, but he makes it's a couple of high-profile mistakes. Not high-profile, so that's a stupid word to use. But I just noticed a couple of things creeping into his game, which he needs to not be doing, basically. Like the pass he's made, it's an easy mistake to make, what he's done. The pass is across his own box to a player that he shouldn't be trying to pass to, which gives the goal. And it's Johnson that we talked about, not even basically trying to attack, just locked, just cancelled the game out. It's like what McInnes' Aberdeen were doing earlier in the season, just cancelling the game out so there's nothing happening, making it boring. And Hibs were unlucky a couple of times, not getting in behind the last line. Irvine especially was making some decent passes, but just a second too late to get them onside. Otherwise, and also it might be a case of motivation for Hibs, because they pretty much, unless Aberdeen pump them 5-0 in the next game, which they're not going to do, they're going to finish third. So they're pretty much done too.
Yeah, 3 points between them, JJ. So even if Aberdeen win, they'd still need Hibs to slip up in the final game. But who knows, maybe that potential cup final hope for them might make them slip up. But we're going to move on, because up next, Partick Thistle get it right up the SPFL.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Time now to hear from our friends Paddy Power, courtesy of producer Charlie. Next weekend, Charlie, it is Scottish Cup semi-final time. Dundee United versus Hibs and St Mirren versus St Johnston. Talk to me.
Yeah, we were denied an All Saints final. Never ever have I ever felt so low.
That's solid. That's a good joke. I like it.
As JJ mentioned, I did say last week when discussing the Premiership that Hamilton would win at St Mirren and Ross County would win at Dundee United, making a mug out of anyone who hits the plus 30 button and skips past this section. However, Paddy Power don't think the week off that the Buddies and the Tangerines had will do them any good next weekend. St Mirren are four favourites to win the Scottish Cup at 4-1. Dundee United are third favourites at 3-1. That means we should expect a St Johnston-Hibs final with the League Cup holders at 5-2 and Jack Ross's Hibs, favourites to go all the way at 13-8. Must remember to say his full name.
Or is John James Ross?
John James Ross, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, there you go. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply, and when the fun stops, Laura?
You stop.
Partick Thistle are back in the Scottish Championship with their promotion confirmed last Thursday after a 5-0 thrashing over Falkirk. We're joined now by Matt Greer, host of the Draw, Lose or Draw podcast. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay, but surely you're doing better than I am.
I'm very good. We might have to change our podcast name after the last few weeks.
Yeah, a bit. I mean, just sum up this season for us, because it's been a competitive title race, albeit a disrupted one. But Partick didn't really start very well, but it's ended well. Just talk us through it in your own words.
It has ended well. You mentioned there's been a title race all the way through. From a Thistle point of view, we've not really felt like we've been in the title race, maybe until 3 or 4 weeks ago. For most of the season, we were 5, 6, 7 points behind Falkirk. Mm-hmm. And for large parts, we were thinking it's playoffs at best. But about a month ago, we really turned our form around. We scored a late equaliser at East Fife. And even though that was seen as a poor result, dropping points at East Fife, coming from 2-0 down to get a point, it seemed to act like a catalyst to turn the form round. And we're unbeaten since the restart. I think it's 10 or 11 games now we're unbeaten. So it's really only in the last 4 or 5 weeks we've really picked up and looked like a title winning side.
Because when the restart happened, obviously the disruption of the restart would have been worrying, but it was something like 3 draws back-to-back, and then you were 2-0 down against East Fife at half-time, and you must be wondering at that point, you know, we might not even make the playoffs. Was it, I mean, how concerning was it? And who was the catalyst? Because I've seen Scott Tiffany's numbers are pretty good, but even Rudden's season turned it around as well.
Absolutely. I think there was a draw at home to Forfar as well, where I think after that, a lot of fans were beginning to sort of turn on Ian McCall. A lot of fans were writing off the season, just looking to next season. But if you're talking about catalysts, Scott Tiffany and Zach Rudden, who you mentioned there, Zach Rudden was not really fully fit and didn't have a good run of games at the start of the season. Scott Tiffany was only brought in the extended transfer window for us, only played since the restart. those two have really been supported by guys like Brian Graham and Stuart Bannigan and Joe Cardo, who have performed all season really, but needed that little bit of help. Tiffany and Rudden, who have been excellent, and it's their goals that fired us to the top, really.
You mentioned Ian McCall and potentially some questions about him halfway through the season, because this is his second stint in charge. It's another promotion for him as well. I know his son's a Partick Thistle fan too, so it's a big positive for him. Are the fans fully behind him still then?
I think now the fans are fully behind him now. I'd say there was a split 5 or 6 weeks ago, just after the restart. Things didn't look great, but I think obviously any fan now is going to find it hard to get against Ian McCall, the players he's brought in, the recruitment. The recruitment for me and McCall has always been good, even if the results off the pitch haven't been. The players he's brought in, even from last season, have really performed this season. So you're looking at guys like Darren Brownlee, Brian Graham, who he's brought in last season, Ricky Foster and Ross Docherty, who brought in for this season. They've really been key men. So there was never a question mark over that aspect. It was just results-wise, the results weren't really good enough. And I'm sure he'd agree, but I think the last month or so, everything's gelled. And I think if we had guys like Tiffany Rudden available from the start of the season, I think the league would have been done weeks ago, to be honest.
And do you think this is a small, a little bit of retribution for what happened to Partick Thistle? Not the only club that ended up falling foul to the decisions that were made to call seasons early. I mean, obviously there was a reason to all of that. But being relegated from the Championship on points per game, it was obviously a sore one to take. So how do you feel from back then to now?
It certainly does feel like what you just said, like a bit of retribution. Obviously the feelings were quite bitter last summer, I think, within the club and from the fans. And I think there was a statement out last summer from the chairman, Jackie Lowe, asking the fans not to forget how this feels when we were put into League One. But as you say, I think Ian McCall is a Thistle man. He really cares about the club. A lot of the players who have been there for a few years and were there last season, I think it will feel extra sweet for them. And of course, the fans are delighted.
You saw Hearts celebrate their trophy lift a little bit strange. Do you understand that, the way that they celebrated their promotion? Do you think Partick Thistle would do the same?
I do understand it, personally. As a Thistle fan, winning silverware doesn't come around too often. This is only the second time I've seen us win a league title, so I want us to go absolutely mental. I want players taking pictures with themselves with the trophy, all the players, all the staff, all that sort of thing. I can understand why it would send a message to Neil Doncaster, it would send a message to the SPFL if we didn't lift the trophy, but moments like this don't come around too often, so I think you've just got to enjoy it. And the way they've played in recent weeks, they deserve the celebrations, they deserve to go a bit mental with a trophy, so good luck to them.
Well, that's it for another week. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Charlie for producing the hell out of us. Laura, JJ, top class again. Thanks to Matt and Kenny for giving us their insight from Partick and from Ross County. We'll be back next Tuesday, so have a great week, stay safe, and we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Scottish Football Show is a Money Mees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.